Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 19 of Back in a Lifeboat, a podcast where we watch and recap every episode of the series Timeless. I'm Helen, and I'm here with my co-host, Heather.
Hey, guys.
And today we're covering season 2, episode 3, Hollywood Land, and I'm so excited.
I wonder why.
I don't know. It's just a regular episode. So as usual, we're going to do the quick episode overview. We have a tiny, tiny piece of news. And then we'll get into the thick of things, get through our overall thoughts and Heather's theories for what's coming. So yeah, for the little bit of news, it was just an interview that Abigail Spencer did with Assignment X, which, yeah, that's, I don't know, is it a magazine or something like that? Yeah. There's a little excerpt in which Abigail Spencer says that she would love to go back to Timeless or direct another Timeless movies. So the interview exactly, she was asked how she felt about the way Timeless ended, and she answered, "Well, I never feel like it totally wrapped up because they kept trying to kill us and we were like, we're still not dead. And actually, I'd love to do another movie. Now that there's Peacock, maybe we could do a Peacock movie. And I really wanted to direct on the show, so if it had gone on, I would have moved into directing. And maybe there will be more." That's what I'm saying, you never know. I mean, who knew about Suits? I mean, she's got a point. Like, there's a lot of shows that are finding, like,
another platform, yeah.
Exactly, and,
that's like I
new
told
momentum.
You guys about, yeah, I told you guys about Wynonna Earp, so, like, it was a 5-season series, and they're coming back with a new movie that they're filming. They just finished filming yesterday. I think they just wrapped up.
I have conflicting emotions about, like, reviving the show. We'll get there when we get to the end, but it's, as much as I love it, and it would have been great to see it go on, the way it ended is, like, when Abigail said, like, I never feel like it totally wrapped up, like, it wrapped up. They left, like, a little open window, but I feel like they gave as good of an ending as you possibly can, so I'd be worried if they were to revive it,
yeah,
that something
yeah, I
would
was
get
burned
messed
by
up.
Miss Fisher's, so I get it, because that was,
Yeah,
the movie that came after was not my favorite of the series.
Yeah, that's always the risk, right? That movie in the end for Timeless was pretty special, and yeah, it'd be awful if they were to revive it and then completely ruin it.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be pretty terrible. But yeah, that's about it. Like, obviously, we don't get a whole lot of Timeless news, but it's always nice when it's mentioned somewhere. For our very last member of the main cast, talking about how they started and what they've been up to, last but not least, we have Mr. Patterson Joseph, who plays Connor Mason, obviously, and lately we've seen it. Well, I haven't yet, but we will. He was just in the new Wonka movie, which is always very exciting to see, like, a familiar face coming back
Yeah,
to
she
the
recognized
screen.
him.
Yeah. Well, guilty. I definitely want to watch it. I haven't really even heard whether it was good or not. Like,
I really didn't hear anything about it either, which is kind of
Yeah.
surprising.
Yeah, because they made,
I don't
like, a
know.
big deal out of it, but I haven't heard, like, any good reviews or any terrible reviews either. So maybe it was
Yeah.
just, like, somewhere in the middle, which is fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been introducing Manny to the world of Willy Wonka.
Yeah. Oh, the Guardian gave it 5 stars, Manny said.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah. As far as other things he's done, he was in an episode of, he was in Law and Order UK, because of course they had a Law and Order in the UK. I mean, they just started one in Toronto, so they're just going around the globe at this point. He was recurring in a show that's called My Dad's the Prime Minister. Like he had a lot of roles, I think, that were basically like UK based. One I've that kind of spoke to me was that he was the voice of King in the Velveteen Rabbit. Thought that was cute. But yeah, he was a guest in a couple episodes in Doctor Who for a
Oh,
bit.
what season?
I did not write it down.
Okay. Oh, I saw he's in The Sandman too. I didn't watch The Sandman, but I had to read that for a class in college.
Oh yeah, and he published a book recently. I forgot what it's called, but I can look it up really quick.
Yeah, no, I was trying to find the Doctor Who episode he was in.
There we go.
I've only rewatched 9. And I didn't watch anything after 10.
It's
I'm not gonna lie.
one of those shows that it's one of those shows that I really want to watch, but I'm the kind of person who needs to start at the very beginning and watch the whole thing, and this show is
Oh yeah, and you can't.
massive.
Yeah. When I don't know if they have all of it anymore either, if I
That's true.
remember,
I mean, I could always start. Like
because
I've been told, you know, that you can start basically like when at the modern,
yeah, I started at
era.
9,
Yeah.
and
So
you can go
maybe.
back and watch some of it, but because they, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory once they start of like what
Yeah.
happened before it.
So yeah, many found the book. It's called The Secret Diary of Charles Ignatius Sancho, and it's about the first
Oh,
black
really?
man in Britain to vote.
Yeah.
Which, yeah,
Didn't
actually,
know that he wrote that.
I should
I knew
100%.
that because it was that he was posting it on his Twitter or
Yeah,
Instagram.
I saw it, but for some reason, you know what?
Yeah.
It's I need to remember to try and find it because that sounds very
Yeah.
interesting.
It's one of those where I was like, "Oh, let me make a note on this," and then it's down on like a list of other like books that I've also made a note of that I probably will never buy or read, but because the list is too
You know
long.
what? I'm gonna pull up the Toronto Library website and then maybe I'll remember that's why I pull it up.
I would come
But
back to that
anyway.
later and be like, "Oh, why was I looking at the oh, my library card, I
I was
bet."
probably just checking my holds. Yeah, no, never mind. Okay, let's get into the episode of review. We're starting on like it's been too long. We forgot how to do this. It's
I
my
know. We took
fault.
like a 1 week break.
I had to, like,
Oh,
I
it's
couldn't
like,
speak last week. My voice is
oh
still
yeah,
doing
been
weird
there.
things, but yeah, I had zero voice last week. So the title of this episode is Hollywoodland. The episode description on Rotten Tomatoes goes, when a Rittenhouse sleeper agent in 1941 Hollywood steals the only copy of Citizen Kane, Lucy Wen and Rufus team up with Hedy Lamarr to get it back. This episode originally aired March 25th, 2018, which is, you know, in sequence. It was written by Matt Whitney and directed by John Showalter. We've talked about them, and they'll both have one more episode together, actually, which is episode 9, which I forget. Episode 9, that's the general. That's great because I can tell. Say the title of this one, and you still have no idea what it's about.
No clue.
There you go. It's one of the rare ones when you can talk about the episode title and it does not give away which time period they're going to. But okay, finally enough babbling. Doing a lot of babbling today. And it's time to get back in the lifeboat. And we start in the past, under the Hollywood sign. I'm just pulling up. I was on the pod one. I got to pull up the one with my notes.
Oh.
And we're under the Hollywoodland sign, and a father drops off his son, and he looks so young. He's a sleeper agent, ready to stay until he's activated. Because, like, So when we the image morphs to like years later, 15 years later, actually, the Calhoun says, to 1951, and he's become a producer at Arkeo, which is Arkeo. I don't know what you can say. Which is we saw like the image we see is one we saw in the montage, like in the premiere.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So it's interesting because like they so they've used I forgot exactly which ones there were, but I think there's that. So this one they've used. No, I don't think they've used the others yet, but I know they will. So it's interesting that they already had those shot this early on.
Yeah, and I mean, they might have wanted to do that sequence, so that's when they did it. And they just filmed like those particular parts early.
Yeah, I guess, but
I guess. I don't know.
it's interesting that they did that. But yeah, so like he was dropped off 15 years previous, like prior. And he was dropped off before they found Keynes, because when the dad comes back later, he tells his son, Lucas, he tells him that they found
Teens.
Keynes in the meantime, and only a couple months has happened. So like they
Yeah, no,
started
I kind of
putting
assumed
the
that
sleeper
anyway.
thing. Yeah, they started
Because the
to.
one in the World War I episode, he had this phone before they found Keynes.
That's true.
And so I think that time period when Lucy was with them is when they were planting sleeper agents.
Yeah, that's true.
So like that, like he was 15 in 2017, 2018, whenever it was that they were planting them.
Yeah.
And then he'll come, if he would have come back, he would have come back at, well, you know, I guess it wasn't 15, he wasn't 15, he was probably like 18, 20 maybe,
Yeah, it
but
was like he's like just adult.
yeah, but he would have come back a couple months later in his 30s. Like that's how that would have
That's
had to
so
happen.
weird. I know.
Yeah, it was
Like it's
weird.
so mind-blowing because at this point, like he almost looks older than his dad. Like I know he's not, but he almost looks older than his dad. It's such a mind fuck.
Yeah.
Like,
That's
oh,
weird. It was
it's been
weird, but
15 years, but for me it's only been a couple of months. I'm like, huh?
yeah. That makes sense that they dropped him off so early, because you hear a lot of the stories of those guys who rise up through Hollywood that become producers and things like that. They would
Yeah.
start very young as like page boys running
Oh,
like scripts and
absolutely.
stuff. And so like it makes sense, like it's a very good like way to plant him
Oh, for sure. I
like
mean,
that.
look at Gwen Siggan on Chicago PD. She started like as an assistant, and she rose all the way to showrunner now. So that's really how it works. So yeah, we've mentioned it, but his 15 years later, his father surprises him because it's time for him to start his mission. And Lucas Calhoun is played by a very familiar face for us, Ted Sears, who was on The Flash, and I remember him in The Flash, but he was also I forgot his I'm blanking on his name in On Fire. No, Cal Shayfield, like the who was Sylvie's
Oh, the fiance.
fiance. The why can't I find my words? The not
It's not,
pastor,
that's what
not
I'm trying to think. It's
reverend, the
the
chaplain. Thank you,
chaplain. Yeah.
Maddie,
I
coming in clutch. Maddie, I think
was
we
like,
should
it's
just
like
do
the
the
guy,
episode
you
because, like, apparently Heather and I are completely useless today. So yeah.
know. My brain was like, thesaurus, let's look at that one. Pastor, preacher, nope.
Nope. He was also on Masters of Sex and 24 Legacy. And he has like lots of one-off, including another Law and Order. This is like the Law and Order Guest Star episode. Just saying. Like everybody's been in Law and Order, basically. And he's been in like a truckload of Hallmark movies. No, not a truckload, like a few. But yeah. And Lucas Feather is also a familiar face, at least for me. He's played by Josh Randall, who's most recently been in Station 19. He plays kind of a douche. He's like
So
a
he fits in with Rittenhouse.
captain. Yeah, absolutely. Like he's a captain, but he's like also an alcoholic who, yeah, who refused to get any sort of help. But yeah, he was in a show called Ed as a main character. That was like a one season show, so didn't get a lot of success, I guess. And he's got a lot of one off in like Castle, Scorpions, SVU, another Law & Order. On Suits as well. I didn't check if it was in like maybe an episode that Abigail was in, but who knows? Maybe. Tiny Suits reunion. Tiny. But anyway, back at the bunker, G has another vision and a seizure. And the vision is she sees Rufus in some kind of costume. Seemingly shooting a guy in the past. And Denise is the one who finds her, and turns out she had no idea this was happening.
Yeah, which I didn't, I guess I didn't realize she didn't know. I guess I just assumed everybody in the bunker knew.
Yeah.
And so that's an interesting take on it.
But also, like, it makes sense that as the boss, she would know, because you would think she would have done something about it, which she does there, because yeah, she insists that Giaz sees a doctor, and
Yeah, after Rufus is like, nope, it's been happening this whole time, and Gia wouldn't let us tell anybody, and Gia's like,
yeah, you can tell Rufus was
you.
not happy that he had to keep it a
Oh
secret. Like,
no, yeah,
he was
no.
worried.
I'm sure he's been wanting to tell her, is kind of what the vibe they were giving off there.
Yeah, and he's like, "Ooh, this is my chance. Let's go." Yeah, obviously Gia's not happy. She basically just flat out says no. And it's the first time she mentions that they might not be just hallucinations. But she doesn't say anything more quite yet.
Yeah, because she doesn't really know, but she knows that she saw last time Rufus's injury
Yeah.
come true, so.
And I guess that was her first inkling. Like, we don't know if she's seen anything other than that burn and now that new, like, vision type of thing.
Which they also give her here some really good, like, reasons for not wanting to tell
Yeah.
Denise. I think like the first one, she feels like she's ex slightly expendable if she's injured in any way, but also her dad, like finding out her dad was sick and then
Yeah.
everything kind of going downhill from there, which is like they made her look really young in this scene with the way like she's dressed and just like her demeanor. And so I feel like they did like a really good job of
Yeah.
setting that up of like she has like multiple layers of insecurities here of like why she wouldn't want this out.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to pinpoint how old she is. I would say like probably mid-20s, but it in
She's
this,
definitely the youngest of the core group, for
yes,
sure.
definitely. But you know, she's as Connor says, like she's saved by the proverbial bells, because the alarms go off. And they find out that the mothership has jumped to January 2nd, 1941 in LA. And since they have literally no idea what's going on then, because, you know, nothing was really going on, other than World War II, which kind of pretty big thing, but not really for Los Angeles. So Lucy and Denise decide to go to Flint for help, which, you know, nobody's happy, but they don't exactly have a choice. I do love Lucy's disguise to go to the prison, which is like a baseball cap.
Oh
That's
yeah, it's like the classic. Nobody will
stealthy.
recognize me.
Stealthy. She didn't even put like the, you know, like the
The
sunglasses.
sunglasses,
Not even. Nobody's gonna recognize me. So they found Flint at the jail infirmary because he's been stabbed. But he's fine. The guy who stabbed him, not so much. I really love Flynn when he's like unhinged completely, like, I killed someone, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, which
Cool,
I
get me
mean, I
out
feel
of
like
here.
he's like extra mad because they've moved him to some kind of prison.
Yeah,
And so he's
but
just like, you put me here.
it's
Gotta
like
do what I gotta do.
I want out because they're trying to kill me. Because yeah, he basically explained that he literally never talked to the guy before, and the guy randomly stabbed him, which is probably not too random. It's probably just Rittenhouse trying to get rid of him, which makes sense. So he's like, get me out because I'm not giving you any more information until you get me out. And Lucy agrees.
They have his diary thing, right? Like Lucy's diary he had.
Lucy has it. Lucy
Yeah.
has it.
Okay. So he didn't, like, not everything was in there. So if he was making notes on it, the notes must not be in there.
Well, I think some of it, because like the things that he's talking about, it's like random thing that he's seen on like other Rittenhouse agents that he's met and killed.
Yeah.
Wait, you can definitely tell. I mean, it's been going on for a while, but he totally has a soft spot for Lucy. If Lucy's the one asking for help, eventually he's gonna say yes. But cut to the lifeboat, and it lands on a hill. And in dashing stolen 40s attire, we see our favorite trio walks to where Flynn's drawing of whatever he's described led them, which is the Paramount Studio. Interesting. I do love Flynn's comments. So, like, they explained they had to steal the clothes. Like Winona Ryder pre-Stranger Thing. It's like, oh my God. Like that has to be, I'd be willing to bet that's Malcolm Ad-Lib.
Maybe.
I could see it.
I don't feel like I can't really see like a writer adding that in, but maybe.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm saying, like, I think it's Malcolm who just ad-libbed it.
Yeah.
Sorry. But like Lucy's dress and like the red gloves and hat and heels, that is one of the best costumes like ever. Like Lucy's costumes in this episodes are like
Yeah. Well,
top
the
tier.
Katharine Hepburn one later is really pretty.
It's
It's like
top
very
tier.
classic Hollywood.
Yeah. And like I do love, like, we've talked about how their budget was a bit more strained. This thing, how convenient it is for half of this episode to be set in movie studios, exactly
Yeah.
where they are filming.
Yeah,
So
makes it
they
easier.
just look there, they just use the backyard, basically. And the costumes that were already there. That was very convenient. It's a very smart way to make an episode. Because this one was probably one of the cheapest one to shoot because, everything was pretty much already there.
Yeah,
So they
you don't have
just
to do
had
like
to put,
sets or
like,
anything.
yeah,
It would
exactly.
just
They
be.
were just shooting outside of the studios and just, adding some like 1940s looking stuff.
Yeah, I liked the like houses they were in too this episode because it felt also very old Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because like I don't watch many old movies, but they really like hit the nail on the head with the houses they were in of like that open kind of like southern. It's a Southern California style. Like you see it where they have like the open kind of courtyard type houses and just like open floor plans that you don't really like see in that time period in other
Yeah.
places, but I think they really,
Probably because they were able to find
yeah, local stuff.
houses like super close
Yeah,
by that were
like
that
even like
style.
the there's like one I was like I got distracted because I was looking at the tile on one of the houses, like that's just really pretty. And
Let
I was like, I
me
probably need
take
to rewind
notes
and
so I
figure out
can
what happened in this
redesign my
scene.
hat. Yeah.
Yeah.
But on that note, we get to the credits. And right after the credits, the time team gets stopped by a security guard, and eventually Rufus pretends to be Langston Hughes. And thanks to Lucy, with a little bit of help, they end up in Balaban's office and they pretend to be selling a new movie musical. And like I'm thinking at this point, like to know all this stuff, Lucy has to be like an old movie buff. That would make sense. Like I could see her, or maybe not necessarily she ne not that she necessarily is a fan, but I could see her mom making her watch those stuff with her when she was a kid.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But I recognize the Balaban name. I was telling you this before from the A Biltmore Christmas. I was like, oh, I know what he, I know him. I know that name.
Yeah, because I forgot when was a bit more Christmas set.
It's probably the 40s.
Yeah, somewhere around then.
Yeah.
I feel like that was probably just post World War II though.
Maybe. I think it was like I feel like it was like Christmas 1945 or something like that.
Yeah, like right after
But
the end of the
I
war,
remember them
yeah.
giving a date. But yeah, if you didn't watch the Biltmore, oh, 1947. If you didn't watch a Biltmore Christmas, it is a time traveling Christmas movie. So with
Hallmark,
a
yeah.
protagonist named Lucy, and nothing to
Yes.
do with ours. But
No, but I still really it was one of the best because it premiered this like last Christmas, last winter.
yeah.
There was plus of like the Hallmark lineup for this Christmas season. And that was honestly one of the best one this year.
It was good. I'm not like a huge Christmas movie fan, but that one was good.
I like a good Hallmark, and they had a couple this year that was really good. And this one was really good. It was like a little different than what they usually do.
Yeah. Well, 'cause they also got to film it in the Biltmore.
Exactly.
It's like if you've ever been to the Biltmore,
I
you kind of
haven't, but
recognize
now
where
I
they're at.
definitely want to now.
Yeah, no, it's the library is gorgeous.
Imagine. That's gotta be so good. I love Rufus's comment, like, who knows what writers look like? And yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, well, and he looks not Langston Hughes like. So, if
Well,
anybody had ever met Langston Hughes, they would have been like, "No, you're not." But
I mean,
that's also how Hedy figures it out later,
exactly.
because the picture.
So in Balaban's office, they try to sell him Hamilton at first,
Yeah.
which apparently will never work. Probably not in the 40s,
And yeah.
but they kind of subtly or not so subtly try to get Balaban to admit his Rittenhouse, but turns out he isn't. So they're kind of stuck on there. But then an actress storms into the office, and it's Hedy Lamarr. Cue Lucy fangirling. Because
Yeah.
she's like, that really introduces I want to say the character of Hedy Lamarr, but she's not a character. I mean, she's a character there, but she's not. She's an actual person. And I love how,
And
Lucy just goes, oh, you're so glamorous. And Hedy just corrects her. I'm like, everybody can be glamorous. I'm more than that. I'm like, yes, you are.
Yeah. Well, no, and that was something that she actually was like rumored to have said,
Oh, really?
that
I did
any
not.
girl can, yeah, any girl can be glamorous, you just have to stand still and look stupid. That was something that was rumored to have been said by Hedy Lamarr. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. And I mean, it's true because, being glamorous is what she's known for, as we see Rufus say later, and turns out she's like so much more than that.
Yep.
But yeah, Balaban asks Hedy if she'll be at the party at the Beverly House later, which is important for later. And Hedy Lamarr is played by actress Alyssa Sutherland, who was one of the main characters in the show Vikings, which I think that might have been a Canadian production, actually. I could be wrong, but I think that might be. It was like,
I remember seeing a lot of
yeah, it
like
was pretty
advertisement for
popular
it, but
at the I haven't watched it. It's been on my list forever, but yeah. She was Aslog. I don't know how you say the name, but if that rings any bell. She was in something called The Mist too, and she was on an episode of SVU because of course she was. recently she's been the one of the main role in a miniseries called New Gold Mountain. I didn't really see what that was about, but
like
Probably worth
Elvis.
checking. So as they were talking about that party, a phone call interrupts, and we learn that a movie called RKO 281 was stolen.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then also just speaking of her, like if you look at pictures of Hedy Lamarr, they like nailed it on her looking exactly like her. Like she
Absolutely,
looks
yes.
very similar.
Yes.
But yeah, so after the phone call, Balaban ushers them out, and while they're outside, Lucy kind of explains that RKO 281 is actually Orson Welles' very famous movie, Citizen Kane. Have you watched it?
A long time ago.
Okay. I'm not gonna lie, I've never watched it. I did the synopsis of it when I was in college because I read something that related to it, so I had to figure out what was going on.
Like,
But
I
never seen
think
it.
I actually watched it probably for English class in like high school. So it probably, like, I remember being like, okay, cool. Like, it probably went right over my head.
Yeah.
I did not
I feel like
remember being,
it's a
I feel like the end, like, you're prepared for like that huge revelation of what Rosebud is, and it's a sled, and you're like,
Yeah.
huh?
Yeah, no, it's like the representative of it, like this
Yeah.
childhood type thing. Yeah, but yeah, like I read something that related to it, so I had to figure out what was going on with it, but I don't think I've ever actually seen it. But or if I have, I've seen bits of it. I vaguely remember bits of it, but it might have been when I was reading it. They were like I was like playing clips.
Like, I
But
love the reaction of Lucy and Rufus when Weya says, "I've never watched it." And it's
I
basically
know.
my reaction
I
when
was like,
people
that's
tell me
me.
they haven't watched Timeless.
Yeah. They were like,
Oh,
but
you haven't
yeah, they're
watched
not
it?
sure why Rittenhouse would want to steal Citizen Kane. And so the only thing Lucy could think of is that William Randolph Hearst, who was a newspaper magnate, might want the movie snuffed out because it exposed his affair with Marion Davis. Yeah, I think it's Davis. It's in my notes later. But
Davis, yeah.
yeah, so
And it's not the first time that we hear of Hearst in the show.
no, because I remember vaguely like when they mentioned him before, and I don't remember what episode it was.
So there's been two mentioned. Kate Drummond in the pilot, she worked for
Yes,
the
she
Hearst
worked for
papers.
Hearst. Yeah.
And in 115, so the Al Capone episode, when they meet Elliot Ness, they tell him that they work for Hearst.
Yeah. Which makes sense because he was like I mean, he owned newspapers
Yeah,
from one end of the country to the other.
for sure.
Yep. And then they decide to go to the party at his house and they need better clothes. Yes.
Are you going into the history minute at some point?
Oh. But it was later. Sorry.
Oh, you had it later? I
I
put it.
don't know why I had it. I don't know why I didn't have it there. But
That's
yeah,
okay.
so they're going to that party, but our history minute. So, I have four things to cover on this one, so it's a little long. But the first thing is the Hollywoodland sign. So today we have Hollywood in the
Hollywood,
hills,
yes.
not Hollywood Land. So it was actually installed in 1923 on Mount Lee in the Santa Monica Mountains, and it originally advertised a real estate development called Hollywood Land, and each letter was 30 feet wide and almost 45 feet tall, and it was adorned with about 40,000 lights, and it was meant to stay up for 18 months.
When they
So
went slightly over.
yeah, slightly over 10 years later, when the after the Great Depression has hit, it is acquired by a new owner who decided the lights were too expensive, which they probably were, 40,000 lights. And so it soon started to kind of like fall apart and fall down, and the new owner donated the sign and its land to the city of Los Angeles. Locals wanted the sign saved because at this point it's kind of like that, a symbol of like what's going on, like it's the Hollywoodland sign.
Yeah.
It's a little bit famous. And so locals wanted it saved, and the city refurbished it in 1949, but removed the land from the end because that was the housing development. They didn't call Hollywood Hollywood Land. And so now it just read Hollywood. Still wooden, still the same size. Over the years, it again fell into disrepair until it was once again restored in 1973. So 18 months in 1923 was the original projected date, and now they're in 1973.
15
At
minutes.
its unveiling, there was an unfortunately thick fog that night, and when the spotlight shone on it, it didn't show anything because the fog was too thick. And so, the same year, the city declared it a cultural landmark. The sign has been famously altered a few times, such as when it was changed to Hollyweed by an art student, when small amounts of weed were decriminalized in California. He earned an A in his art class assignment. He used fabric to co cover the letters, so he didn't like rebuild the letters or knock them down or anything. 1973 restoration did not hold up for long as there was termite damage to the wood. And then to save the sign, once again, a significant amount of money would be needed. So, enter Hugh Hefner, of all people, the founder of Playboy. He threw a fundraiser where celebrities could sponsor a letter. And by the end of 1978, the old sign was torn down and a metal replacement was in its place. This is the sign we see today. And though it's had touch-ups, such a, and it's had a few touch-ups, such as recently being repainted for its 100-year anniversary last year.
Wow.
So
18
that's the
months
Hollywood
turn
sign.
into 100+ year.
100 years, yeah. Which
Yeah.
obviously it's not the original anymore because the wood was eaten away, but
No, but the
still,
spirit's there.
that's a long, yeah, long time. Now for Rufus's cover, Langston Hughes. This is kind of just a short one because they didn't have him as
Yeah.
like, a character. But he was born February 1, 1901. They used to think it was 1902, but recent research they realized it was actually a year earlier. He was born in Joplin, Missouri, and he was born James Mercer Langston Hughes. And he moved around quite a bit as a child and started writing poetry at a young age, with his first poem published right after high school. After high school, he traveled to Mexico before attending Columbia University, and then added to his travels by going to Africa and Europe while working as a seaman. His first book, The Weary Blues, was published in 1926 after he moved to Washington, D.C. He completed his education at Lincoln University and then published his first book, Not Without Laughter, in 1930. He was an enormous influence on the Harlem Renaissance in the 1920s and used his personal experiences in his writing to tell stories of common experiences in Black America. He wrote poetry that could be enjoyed by anyone and not just those who picked through the esoteric practices of poets at the time, making his work both accessible and relatable to his audience. And his body of work includes not only poetry and novels, but also plays, newspaper columns, and comic strips. He passed away from complications with prostate cancer on May 22, 1967. And then we have William Randolph Hearst, the Hearst paper guy. And he was born in San Francisco, California on April 29, 1863. William Randolph Hearst was the son of gold mine owner and Senator George Hearst and his wife Phoebe. As a young man, William attended Harvard University for 2 years, but he was expelled for sponsoring beer parties, like literal ragers, and sending his professors chamber pots with their faces in the bottom of them. And then, so he took over the San Francisco Examiner from his father in 1887. The paper had originally been purchased by George for political reasons. Rittenhouse in this episode shows why it's good to have a paper in your pocket. And it was failing at that point. So he had some newspaper experiences from the Harvard newspaper and also a small apprenticeship under Joseph Pulitzer. So he quickly adopted the sensationalist methods of Pulitzer and also investigative reporting to turn the paper around and started showing a profit. From there, he purchased the New York Journal and waded into the competitive New York newspaper world. He lured Richard Outcault away from Pulitzer's New York World, which was his paper, and started running his The Yellow Kid cartoons, which was part of Hogan's Alley. And running side by side with the sensationalized stories, the term yellow journalism was coined from that cartoon, The Yellow Kid. Yellow journalism was would describe the overhyped stories in the papers, particularly the stories about the Cuban Revolution and anti-Spanish sentiment, which was the primary focus of Hearst. He was pushing the U.S. to join to go to war against the Spanish, basically. This yellow journalism was one of the factors that later led to the Spanish-American War, though it was not its primary cause. Like, he didn't just pull anti-Spanish sentiment out of nowhere. Yeah, people already felt that. Hearst also used his influence to attempt to squash the Orson Welles movie Citizen Kane, which was an obvious parallel to his own life. being about a newspaper baron who finds fame but realizes it gives his life little meaning, and a marriage to an opera star that mirrors Hearst's own affair with Marion Davis, an actress he helped rise to fame. Originally, it was thought he was a more hands-off, he had a more hands-off method of dealing with the film after his newspapers were tipped off about the parallels that gossip columnists, but memos found suggest that he was more directly involved and possibly tipped the FBI off on Welles' potential involvement in communism. So, his papers also did not report on the movie, and at the time, this led to fewer theaters running the film and dampened the film's success. However, today, the film is recognized as a classic. He also built his home, the Hearst Castle, in San Simeon, and filled it with antiques, both pieces that were well known as well as things he just liked, and that includes the Canova. Unlike museums, it has curated rooms rather than displays, and it was donated to the California State Parks in 1958, and you can actually go visit it today.
Oh, that'd be interesting. I wonder if they
Yeah, it's.
actually filmed there.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I have no idea what it looks like.
It's I don't think I didn't see anything that would remind me of that style. It's a very like art heavy. Like you would see a lot of stuff in the background that I don't know that they would
Yeah.
show. I think they just filmed in like a random house. 'Cause if I'm being honest, that house looks really, really familiar, and I think it was in an episode of Murder, She Wrote, possibly. I need to go back and look. But
Oh, that wouldn't be. So is that? Oh yeah, no, I see the Earth Estate. No, it looks different.
yeah,
It's more
it's
like
more
a
like a.
terracotta colored
Yeah,
house.
I
So yeah.
don't know the exact terms for what it's called, but it's
Yeah.
the way the room was decorated in that in the show is not how they would have decorated that house.
Yeah, just curious.
Yeah, but and plus it's San Simeon's north of where they were. Like they would have had to go way outside the city. So lastly, we have Hedy Lamarr. She was born Hedwig Eva Keisler in Vienna, Austria, to Jewish parents on November 9th, 1914. Hedy, as she was known, was curious about mechanical workings, which her father would describe to her as they went on walks. And by 5, she was dismantling her music box to see how it functioned. Her mother, a concert pianist, nurtured her love for the arts. Hedy was discovered by film director Max Reinhardt at the age of 16 and began studying at his acting school in Berlin. She was it in her first movie in 1930, Geld auf der Straße, which is money on the street. It was in the film Ecstasy in 1932 that she gained her notoriety for being shown tastefully nude. And in 1933, she was spot, which that's what Rufus mentions
Yeah.
in the 30s. In 1933, she was spotted by a munitions manufacturer. That's a hard word to say twice. Or together, Fritz Mandl, and she was in a play at the time and performing, and they got together and got married, and Mandl then restricted her from performing. So like, she realized pretty
Asshole.
quickly, yeah. So like, he sees her performing, and then he's immediately like, no. She realized pretty quickly he just wanted a beautiful wife and a kind of a doll more than he wanted her. And so she was instead the beautiful host to his dinner parties, which would include members of the Nazi party. Mandel was Jewish, which likely explained why they were meeting in his home rather than in public. And Hedy was rumored to have overheard discussions of arms building and development during that time. She divorced him and escaped to London in 1937, where she met Louis B. Mayer of Metro Goldwyn and Mayer, or as we know it, MGM. Mayer agreed to sign her on if she changed her name from Keisler to something else, and that's when she becomes Hedy Lamarr. She appeared in her first English film in 1938 called Algiers, and she was known for being slightly difficult, which makes me wonder, was she though? Because slightly
Was
difficult
she,
in the
or was she,
40s or 30s is.
or was she outspoken?
Yes. And
Like,
so
yeah.
she set up her own production company in 1946, but it was actually in 1949, starring in a Cecil B. DeMille's. I don't know how do B. DeMille is it? I cannot remember how to say his
No
name now.
idea.
But anyway, DeMille, because it's like I'm ready for my close up, Mr. DeMille. That's it. Okay. Anyway, his movie Samson and Delilah is where she found her greatest success. Like many actresses at the time, she was given pep pills by the studio, and these made her behavior become erratic. She retired from film in 1958. Now, outside of acting, and there were some things I read that literally, like, that's all they talked about. They don't talk about her inventions or anything like that. It's just kind of sad that
Yeah.
they literally, like, never recognized her for that. But outside of acting, she was also an inventor. Howard Hughes, who she briefly dated, showed her his airplane factory, and she in turn studied fish and birds, found the shapes that were fastest, got them together, made some plans for some airplanes, and showed it to him. He was like, "You're a genius," because it's the basically the same idea of like making wings that fly fast through the air, and also like the fish who cut through is the nose of the airplane. So, she figured that out. And then she also met composer George Antheil in 1940. He was a fellow inventor, and the two began working on a way to help the Allied forces as they entered World War II. Working with the idea of guided weaponry, a subject Hetty was well versed in because she'd been married to a munitions manufacturer, the two developed the idea of frequency hopping that allowed sender and receiver to hop radio frequencies simultaneously in split-second intervals to prevent signal jamming and detection. It was controlled by a piano player mechanism, meaning it could use 88 frequencies, 88 keys. And Antheil had stated it was Hetty's idea. So same idea as the Curies, where it was originally kind of tried to credit to the guy. He was like, no, it was her. She
That's
and
the good
Antheil
kind of
presented,
guy.
yeah, presented it to the Navy, and they didn't originally use the idea, but took it and kept it classified. Instead, to help the war effort, she did a short tour to raise money with war bonds, which she raised quite a bit. At the time, she actually wasn't a U.S. citizen yet, which wouldn't happen until 1953. And she and Antheil let the patent on her frequency hopping spread spectrum technology expire in 1959, and they never saw a profit from their work. Today, that technology, known as FH, is a basis for Bluetooth, which I'm using right now currently with my headphones.
Exactly.
And then while it was kept classified, it was viewed by certain developers, and then others were also simultaneously coming up with different ways to do the same kind of like guided systems. And that's where the idea of direct sequence spread spectrum came from, or DS, which is what Wi-Fi uses today. So a lot of times they'll say, oh, she's the mother of Wi-Fi, but no Wi-Fi today uses FH. They all use DS. So she was a huge pioneer, though, in the communication systems. We wouldn't have
But I
Bluetooth
mean,
without her.
just the Bluetooth thing.
She's also noted for improving the stoplight and inventing a tablet that could be dropped in water that would create a drink similar to cola. After retiring from film, Hedy Lamarr lived a life as something of a recluse compared to her film days. She was arrested in 1966 and 1991 for shoplifting, but was acquitted on the first charge and given a year of probation on the second, which makes me wonder if that's why they threw in the line with Winona Ryder
I was thinking about that. That's
instead of, because
interesting.
I don't think Rufus would have known about Hedy Lamarr, but he might
Yeah.
know one of more like well-known one. She was a noted beauty. She did say the line, or was credited with saying the line, "Any girl can look glamorous. All you have to do is stand still and look stupid," like she said in the episode. And she was married six times. In 1997, she was recognized by the Electronic Frontier Foundation for her work in communication systems, and she died in 2000, which is just kind of crazy to me because I didn't realize, like, I don't know. That just seems like so like different eras.
I know. If yeah, if
And
you that's
this
something
sounds
that's
bad, but like I feel like a lot of those film stars didn't live that long.
no, that's true.
You know?
I
So
think there was a lot of drugs and alcohol going on.
oh, and the pills and things like
And
that,
then
yeah.
pills, yeah. 'Cause like especially for a woman, they had to uphold a certain standard of beauty, and so like the things they did to uphold that standard of beauty was a lot of drugs.
So, back to the episode. Like this, I said they decided to go to a party at Randolph's house, or well, sorry, Hearst house, and they need better clothes. So they're already at the back lot, and they just decide they're just going to drop by the costume department.
Hey, might as well.
Yes. Yeah, so, And the dress she ends up with was a Katharine Hepburn dress, and I can't remember what
Yes.
movie it was in, but very nice dress.
I can look it up really quickly, but I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, while Wyatt does some recon, Lucy gives Rufus more historical context about Hedy Lamarr because he did know a little bit. But outside, we see the Rittenhouse duo, father and son.
From the Philadelphia Story.
The what?
The movie where Hepburn wears that dress is the Philadelphia Story.
Philadelphia Story. Okay. So we see the Rittenhouse guys outside, and they have the movie in the trunk of their car, and so we know where the movie's at. We just need to figure out how to get it back. So at the bunker, Denise has booked a doctor to come see Gia, and he knows about the seizures, but not about the time travel. And I want to know how they explain the bunker.
That and like kind
She's
of
supposed to be
what's the
dead, I'm
point?
assuming. Yeah. And so Gia doesn't want to, and she explains why, which I kind of mentioned earlier about her dad. And Denise kind of reassures her and says, like, it's going to be okay. And ultimately, she agrees to see the doctor,
I really
which
like
is his
this because
mom, Denise.
we've seen Gia a lot as, very like outspoken, very fierce. And we see her very vulnerable right there, which is not something we've seen before. And Claudia did such a great job. It
Yeah.
doesn't last very long, but it's really good. Is it the
So,
fact that we get some backstory to just really gives like a lot more depth?
yeah, because we have backstory from pretty much like everybody else, it feels like,
Pretty much.
except her.
It's not a whole lot, but it's a little something.
Yeah. So, at the Beverly house, the time team arrives and they have their new outfits on. And Hetty pulls in right behind them and accompanies them inside. And she pulls Rufus aside and asks him to recite some poetry. And he does a beautiful rendition of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air's theme song.
That was
Yeah, which is not very impressive. And then
No,
Hetty's like, "You're not Langston Hughes." And so he's like, "How did you ever know?"
I was just
But
so talented right there, like.
yeah. So Lucy and Wyatt walk into the party and they find hers just before Rufus and Hetty catch up with them. And Rufus tells them, Hetty knows, by the way. And Rufus
And I like
says
that
they're
they
friends
all
with
have a
Orson
moment
Welles.
like when Rufus says like Hedy knows they kind of jump to like time travel, like they look panicked for a second, like he told them
Yeah.
about time
They're
travel.
like, she could figure that out. I mean,
She
think
could.
about
And I mean
it.
I feel like she does at the end.
Maybe. Yeah.
Or eventually maybe she will, yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so Rufus instead tells her they're friends of Orson Welles and they're sent to retrieve RKO 281, which is the movie. And they ask Hetty to introduce them to Hearst, but he's leaving. And they discover that the man that's with him is Lucas Calhoun, a producer for RKO, and they quickly realize he's the Rittenhouse sleeper agent.
Yeah, knowing that he's
So,
got a movie in the work called Jurassic Park, it's kind of a dead giveaway. Like,
before its time.
yeah.
Can you imagine a movie about dinosaurs in the 40s?
I'm trying to think.
Or Jurassic Park without like all the people from Jurassic Park, like
Okay, to be
that would
fair,
be
and that's gonna
impossible.
be your cue to do the same thing that Lucy and Rufus did. I've never seen Jurassic Park.
What? I mean,
Not my kind of
I can't
movie,
say I've seen
but
it a lot. Yeah, I mean, I can't say I've seen it a lot, but I watched it before I watched Jurassic World because I wanted to watch Jurassic World. And
yeah. Most like I don't watch that kind of movie because I'm a coward and I hate being startled.
yeah, there's a few in there. And plus it was like it was a book first. And so
Yes, yeah, I'll read the book.
how would that work with them? Anyway,
Well,
but
I mean, the book's probably not being written. Who wrote it?
Michael Crichton, something like that.
Yeah, so he's
Yeah, no, he
probably
doesn't write until 1990.
exactly. So
But yeah. Yeah, so but they go to follow him and they are stopped by Balaban, who's like, "No, you have to sing us a song." And so that falls on Lucy, and Lucy's like,
but I mean,
"What?"
I like the little like callback. You were in a band.
Yeah. And she's like, "A long time ago." But yeah, so she's the one who has to sing, and meanwhile, Hetty and Rufus head upstairs and follow Callahan and Hurst, or Calhoun, sorry, Calhoun and Hurst. And despite kind of a shaky start, Lucy wins them over with a beautiful rendition of "You Made Me Love You," which is directed, obviously, very directly at Wyatt.
I like
And
again, like it's a scene. I just sorry, I gotta start going into it. Like people, if you're not a Lyatt shipper, like skip the next, I wanna say like 15 to 20 minutes because I got like 2 pages of notes in what's coming. So there's gonna be it's that those scenes are gonna get dissected. But like, they make it, you know, sometimes how in shows or movies, like they have people that are not singers that go and sing and they're like amazing right away. I love how it's really not that, like she, you know, she pulls it off. She does a great job, but like she starts and like she said, she hasn't sang and like she hasn't been singing. She hasn't been in a band in probably like close to 20 years, or maybe more like 10, 15, but so like she starts, she's not really on pitch, she's super nervous, and then she looks at Wyatt and she relaxes, and then she just starts having fun and she's playing with Balaban and whatnot, and like she really puts on a real
For sure.
performance, and you can tell like this is like band Lucy that's just back for 2 minutes. And then at the end, you know, she's like, "You made me love you," and she looks straight at Wyatt, and he's like, "The look." He's like breathless, it's completely blown away, and he's got just a little corner smile at the end. She's like, "Ah, oh, she's talking to me. Like, she's. This is not just one way. Like, this is reciprocated. Like, it's a
Yeah, which I
beautiful."
feel like they jumped a little bit here, but they almost need to, because otherwise they're not gonna get to where they want to go, because I feel like I kind of have some ideas of where they want to go by the end of this season. But yeah, like it was a good, like, this is like a bridge to where they've been, to where they're going, to the at the middle of this episode.
And it's so this episode was written by Matt Whitney, who writes on Chicago Fire. And he wrote a lot of Bretzi episodes. And you can definitely see the parallels, like the similarities between Lyatt and Bretzi. And like this, it starts very much here. I mean, you know, it starts in the build-up too, but this is kind of that scene at Molly's in 902 where, you know, Gallo tells the story of how Matt like jumped off a moving truck and they lock eyes, and that's when they realize, oh, it's not one-sided. That reminds me of that. And then we'll see later, but you know, when we
There's
get
more.
to the end, it's the same reaction it gets for me. Like, this is the, you know. Oh, and by the way, no, this stops here. But yeah, no, I really like this scene. And it, like, you
That
know,
was good.
it could have been very cringy, and it really isn't.
No, I feel like it was a really, really good, like I said, it's a good bridge from where they were to where they are by the end of this
Yeah,
episode, or close to
and
the end.
Wyatt says it later, but it's good to see Lucy happy.
Because she like, and she hasn't been since she came back from,
Well,
well,
because
even before
she,
that,
yeah.
like, 'cause he's maybe really never known her like super happy, because it was always about Amy or, you know, fixing things. It wasn't, they didn't
Yeah.
have time for that.
Exactly. And
It's
like
not like
on
they
top of
really
that,
have hung out outside of that until they had to live in the bunker together.
that's true. And yeah, on top of that, she kind of was taken hostage by Rittenhouse for 6 weeks and been
Yeah.
brainwashed. And so, yeah.
Yeah, so while they're downstairs, Rufus and Hetty are upstairs bonding over science, and they managed to hear Calhoun and Hearst, and Rittenhouse wants to blackmail Hearst into writing a column for Rittenhouse in this newspaper in exchange for the film. So, like I said earlier, the reason that George Hearst bought that San Francisco Examiner to begin with was for political reasons, because it's good to have a newspaper in your pocket. So I'm assuming it's the same here. But
Well, it's literally what they're
outside,
saying. Yeah, they just want that influence.
And so outside, Rufus is caught up with Lyatt. Lucy explains how influential Hearst's papers were, and this is why the deal is huge for Rittenhouse. And Rufus explains that the exchange is tomorrow morning, so they didn't bring it with them then. They need to have a plan to stop it tomorrow. And they do need a place for tonight. And as luck would have it, Hetty pulls up and is like, "No taxi?" And she's like, "Nobody walks in LA. Come
Nobody.
on." And she invites them to spend the night as her guests in her house, which is, I think, the one I got distracted by later. But
It's a great
I
house.
know there were things that I was supposed to be paying attention to, but the house was really pretty.
It's okay. I pay attention to those things for
Yeah, Helen did.
the most of us.
So at the bunker, meanwhile, Gia sees the doctor, and Mason explains what he knows about Gia's symptoms, and it's not good.
No,
One of
that.
a like one of the past pilots is severely schizophrenic now, and one died of a brain aneurysm. And
Oh,
so
no.
Denise is like, "You just weren't gonna tell us this at all? Like,
Yeah.
what?" So yeah, it's not good. And we don't know what the doctor has said yet about Gia, but obviously he's thinking that she doesn't have much time left, basically.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like a, that's the tiny thing you didn't say, just little
Yeah.
small
Kept that
lines.
to himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now we go back to Hetty's house, and Hetty and George take Rufus to see her inventions because scientists like to hang out together. So yeah, there's another little similarity between Bretzi and Lyatt, and I apologize for people who don't watch Chicago Fire, but those are my two ships. Written by the same man, like in part. But when Hetty leaves them alone, she calls them lovebirds. And that makes her my favorite person in this episode, just for that
She's quick
alone.
to take up.
I love it so much. Like it's one of the best thing when you have like a ship that especially is not together yet and someone else is like, "Oh, how long have you two been together?" Which I mean, I could make the parallel with Bretzi too, but I feel like that happens to basically every ship ever.
Yeah, most of them.
But yeah, in the season 10 premiere of Fire, like Cap goes behind them and they're like think they're being like Matt and Sylvie think they're being subtle and he's like, "See you later, lovebirds."
Yeah.
So like Matt Whitney didn't write like 1001 of Fire, but he wrote 1002. So he's like right there in the writer's room. I'm like, I gotta imagine it comes from the same person. Because Lovebirds is not necessarily like the first thing you hear, like the first term you hear. I don't know. I'm choosing to assume that it
Maybe not from
was
Cap, yeah.
Matt Whitney. Yeah. I'm saying it's Matt. If we ever interview him, we'll have to ask him. Like, put that in the questions. But anyway, Wyatt and Lucy go outside by the pool to talk. And they start, like it starts with Lucy talking about how George was married when he and Hetty met, because like he's got a big crush, but their timing was not the best. Which, we know about someone who, I mean, Wyatt wasn't married when they met, but he was still kind of married. Like he was still not over Jessica like at all. So like they talk about that at first and they flirt a little bit. There's so much banter between the two of them. I love it. And then finally Wyatt tells Lucy in like a roundabout way that she's beautiful. And the way he looks at her during this whole conversation, like he's fully in. Like fully in.
I think it's like he's obviously like finally gotten past all the hangups he had. He obviously realized whenever Lucy was missing, he's in love with her.
Yeah. And
And so it's just like,
he just
yeah.
figured out like he's got a very, very good inkling that she feels the same way. So he's like finally he can be happy again, which again he hasn't been in a very long time. But yeah, and I like to like they share a little bit more of their past with sorry with their prom, their different prom, which Lucy missed because I forgot even why. I was not focused on that. That's when like Wyatt admits that he was already pretty lost in high school, and then with everything that happened with Jessica, he fully tells her, "You saved my life," because when he went into this mission, he fully expected to get
Not come
hurt
out of
or
it, yeah.
die or not come out, and we saw it like at the Alamo was the kind of the pentacle of it, which she mentions like when. She says, "You saved my life," and she goes through like, "Oh, which time? The Alamo, the Watergate." The Alamo always gets cited, by the way. Always,
Yeah.
whenever it comes up, this is a big one. But yeah, Lucy ends up telling him that she feels the same way. Look like she felt the same way when she thought he died, and so she felt the same way when she thought he died than he did when he lost his wife. Like, this is not little feelings. Those are big feelings. Big feelings. And Wyatt asked her, like, what about now? And this is Wyatt saying, like, I'm ready for this. I'm ready for us. Are you ready? And she is ready. They're so vulnerable with each other in this scene. And like Lucy and Wed, they're never this vulnerable with anybody else.
Yeah.
They're
Which
just,
makes sense. I mean,
yeah, from the beginning, like they were very trusting. Like they instinctively trusted each other. But
yeah.
then we cut to them getting into a bedroom. And yeah, I was less than subtle in the notes. But they end up sharing a first kiss and then some. But then even then, like, I should, I can't, like, every part of it is just so good. And like, Lucy's nervous at first. And I love that Wyatt is not.
Yeah.
At this point, like he's sure of him, like he moved past everything and is like, let's go. But at the same time, it's Lucy who more or less like makes the first move. Like she's the one who has to decide. He gets them there, and she's the one who
Yeah.
has to decide, which again, Bretzi 902 was kind of the
Yeah.
same.
But I feel like they've so more recently, I feel like that's where they're at with Carver and Violet, of he's like, obviously I have feelings for you, like I'm gonna let you move at your own pace and you can get here whenever you want
Yeah.
me, I'm here. Like I feel like that's a so for Firewise, I like that there's a, like they have enough similarities to the other big ships that have happened, but they're their own ship as well.
Yes,
You know
I
how I
agree.
feel about them.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. I mean, no, not quite as much as you do. Okay,
No, because
fire
I wouldn't bring
parenthesis.
back Hawkins at this point.
No, I would. I will care. I will care. I would. Yes, like we're going to talk fire for 2 seconds. Nah. I love Violin Carver, but I don't care if somehow Hawkins were to return from the dead. I'm like, dump him. Just go back to heaven. This is your
Nah.
soulmate. Go back. Imagine though, like the torture for Violet.
I think
Anyway.
she'd still pick Carver.
No,
Anyway.
I don't think so. Not now. Anyway, that is another this is something for me to set Molly's that we should throw them that question, see what they say. But anyway, they end up in bed and we get the I love the music behind that scene. Which it starts at the Layat theme and it's kind of the Layat theme, but like the continuation of it. If you listen on that playlist, so it's Robert Duncan that did the music, and there's the whole playlist on Spotify and Amazon Music, and it's literally like this whole song is called Wyatt and Lucy, and it starts like the introduction of that song is basically the Layat theme that we've had so far on their scene, and then it just evolves into that music that they play through the bedroom scene. But yeah, and then so it's fade to black and we get a love confession, we get a love scene, and ladies and gentlemen, we even get the morning after. Like we were
Yes,
fed.
with Rufus. That's the best part of this whole I know what your
I
favorite
mean,
part of it
no.
is, but
I
my
do.
favorite part is Rufus coming in and being like, "My ship is made
I
it."
know. Like,
He's so
Rufus,
happy.
like, first of all, like, they wait. So Lucy and Wyatt wake up together and they're all cute and flirty again. And, like you said, I do agree that Rufus coming in, like, barging in on them is the best because, like, oh, I was looking for both of you and I found you. And
Yep,
he's so,
you're
like,
here.
and Rufus at this point is all of the Layat shippers. We were like, woohoo, let's
Yeah.
go. But also, like, he goes outside, said, okay, I'll wait for you outside. And do you think Lucy and Wyatt actually get up? No. Wyatt just goes straight for round two. Like, he's
I feel like
like,
Rufus
he
saying
can't
he's gonna wait
wait.
outside, it probably means he's gonna go somewhere else. He's not stupid.
Yeah, I hope so. But yeah, no, that was I love a little bit of comedy behind it. That was really good. I don't know, for me, like this entire sequence is pretty perfect. Like,
Yeah.
and we watched like right before we recorded, we watched the extended pool scene that like the first thing they filmed and then they decided to change it up. And honestly, like I yes, that pool scene is fun. But I like what ended up in the episode better.
Yeah. I think it flowed better.
Yes.
The pool scene, like the deleted one or the unused one, just went on a little bit too long without any kind of like break.
Yeah, I agree. And I think also put more emphasis on everything that transpires between Lucy and Wyatt during that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, as much as it pains me, we have to leave Lucy and Wyatt for now. And we go back to the bunker, and Gia comes out of her appointment, and she's better than fine, apparently.
Yeah.
Because turns out she's always had a heart murmur that kept her from running tracks, and now it has disappeared.
Yeah. So
So
I'm not
now
sure a
she.
cure by time travel, with the resulting like somehow like time traveling visions is a good one.
I don't know. She she's
But
got she's
I
kind of
mean
has
that's
the
an
same
improvement.
question. She's got to have the same
Yeah.
questions for Mason. She's like,
Yeah.
what happened?
Yeah. So which is interesting too, because like obviously that would mean like whoever the either something different happened to her or the brain aneurysm when that guy wasn't cured somehow, or it was created by the time travel stuff. So that brings some interesting questions for sure.
It does bring in a lot of questions.
Because I'm assuming the So the one he said was being treated for severe schizophrenia, it's not what it actually is. Like they're seeing some kind of visions of the past or something somehow instead. So, and that's just the only explanation they have. But yeah, so
Yeah, those are
I
questions
think it's interesting. The future.
for the future. And I would jump back into 1941, and Rufus and Wyatt are waiting for Lucy, and Rufus teases the hell out of Wyatt. He's like, "Nah, don't worry, I'll be cool. I'm not gonna tell anyone. I mean, I'm gonna tell Gia for sure, but I'm gonna not
Yeah.
gonna tell anyone else. Like, it's a
Not
given."
Mason or Denise.
Yes.
That's
Or
it.
Flynn eventually.
Flynn. Yeah.
Not that he would have told Flynn anyway, but yeah, like I love that. It's like, I mean, Gia, of course. Like, I'm not keeping anything from her. This is too juicy.
Think she'd figured out pretty quick
Oh yeah.
what's
I
she's a
just
roommate, so.
I wish we'd seen more of like the like the talk between the couples about the other couple,
Yeah.
because I feel
Yeah.
like that'd be hilarious, like the gossip. So hey, Gia, let me tell you what happened, let me tell you what happened, you won't
Yeah.
believe it. But yeah, Lucy finally arrives with a new dress because it's her favorite time period, and I mean, I can't blame her because all those dresses are fantastic. And she's got great timing because Calhoun just comes out of his office right at this moment. And so they follow him to the exchange location, which is stage 14, because it's written on the wall. And I kind of went and looked it up. And I don't think it was actually open in 1941, because there's n like they have a list of like all the movies that were, or like some of the famous movies that were shot in there, and like some of the TV shows. And I think the oldest one that they were listed was 1952.
Oh yeah.
And Rosemary's Baby was filmed in there. And the Nutty Professor too. The
Random.
1963 one.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Oh, Top Gun too. Top Gun.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I know you watched this one. And
I do like Top
Charmed
Gun.
and Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Those were
Oh
on
yeah.
that set, on that studio. Just thought it was fun. But yeah, a security guard interrupts the exchange, and so Calhoun shoots him because, Rittenhouse doesn't care. And then he kind of starts running. Wyatt goes after him. We get a little Lucy goes, "Be careful." And it's like first little worried girlfriend moments. Don't get killed now that we got together. Because we want to be
That would be
happy.
tragic. Not as tragic, maybe, as what happens later. It was still tragic. But anyway.
I don't want it. But yeah, there's a gunfight during which Rufus steals the movie back, and Wyatt ends up killing Calhoun. And Lucy, she tried to save the security guard, but he dies, so they have to run away. It's really not clear, but then I thought for a second, because she looks like Lucy looks very distraught at that moment. And I was wondering if maybe that police officer reminds her of the soldier that she had to shoot in the premiere. Like they never
Maybe.
really get into it, but I don't know. I was just thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I could see it being like a residual from that first episode.
Yeah.
Or just like in general, like, I mean, she's got to be like just tired of not being able to save people as well.
Yeah, as a
But,
like generally speaking, for sure.
yeah. But so, back in the present. At the jail, Denise is visiting Flynn and kind of slips him a note. And we don't see what's on the note, but switch back 1941, which I thought that was kind of a weird little place to drop that, I guess. But I guess they really couldn't do it later either.
Well, no, because yeah, then
Because
they do the parallel between when they go to the jail in 1941 and what how Flynn gets out. So yeah.
Yeah. And so 1941, Rufus drops off the reels to Hetty and gives her a few tips about the future. And
I
In the
love
car,
like
they
I love that Rufus is like, you know what? Fuck this.
screw
Exactly.
it. Yeah.
Let's just do this.
Yeah. Well, especially because, like I said, like after her film career is over, she's kind of obscure after that.
And
Like,
she doesn't get the recognition of she's
exactly.
always
Yeah.
thought of as the actress who got naked.
Yeah.
So
Well, I
at
mean,
least this way you can surmise that because she made that much so much money from that patent that she gets more like she was, oh, she's that billionaire that used to be an actress, but she's actually an inventor.
So in the car that they just stole, Rufus and Lucy are happy with kind of how the outcome was. Rufus interrupts them because why, or sorry, I think they're supposed to say Lucy and Wyatt.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Also, like, both
go ahead.
Lucy and Wyatt jinx themselves. Because, like, Wyatt at this moment goes, it was nice to see you happy. And, like, just shut up, dude. Shut up.
Yep.
Shut up.
Yeah, and so that obviously is like saying quiet in hospital. Because it's about to go down. But so Rufus interrupts them and gets in the car, and they have one last thing they have to do before going home. And so
The wife
they drive to,
attitude, like again, you know,
yeah.
Lucy being the grown-up responsible. Either of you have a better idea? No, didn't think so. Let's go.
Yeah. So they drive to the site of the Oakland State Penitentiary, currently being built, and they go to a cell to hide something in the wall. And in the present, Lynn finds the package. So that's how, that's where we see that note come into play.
I mean, I assume they looked it up, but they were lucky that they never like remodel the jail or like you know do any kind
Yeah,
of
'cause it would have taken
construction.
like one demolition
Exactly.
to make all this go away.
Just like we're just gonna redo that wall. Oh look.
Yeah, or even them like renumbering the cells.
Oh boy, yeah.
But yeah, so Flynn finds the package and it has some kind of smoke poison thing bomb, and he's able to escape. And so then back at the bunker, the team has made it home safely, and Rufus finds G in the kitchen. And meanwhile, Denise asks Lucy and Wyatt how everything went, and Flynn's there too. Hello. And Wyatt's not pretty, very happy about that, so he just walks off, and Lucy follows him, and they're standing in front of like this fan, and I thought it was just a really cool backdrop.
Yes.
And I'm not gonna lie and say that I paid attention to it the first time because I was paying attention to the background again, and so I had to rewind and listen to it. But they're kind of flirting and they're happy,
And
and
that's
you
where
know
the
they're just
episode ends.
excited. Yeah, this is where Helen
This
would
is
love for
where
the
the
episode
episode
to
ends. They're
end
really
because
happy. They're
that's.
in love. And then Lucy says, there's nowhere else to go but down. And just, you don't
Yeah.
say that.
Yeah, no. And so Wyatt gets a text and he's like, I have to go. And yeah, so very abruptly. And who do we assume texted him? Do we find out later?
I forgot if we do, but I'm always assumed that it's Jessica just, you know, saying like she's got a she needs because she I think she basically says, well, we'll see in the next episode. I forgot what she says about it, but
Okay. I didn't know who it was. My first thought was maybe it was Flynn, and then I was like, but why? I
no, I
thought it
think
was
it's probably
Helen.
just Jessica telling him something.
Okay. But anyway, so for whatever reason, he believes whatever is texted to him, immediately leaves. And then Rufus calls Lucy to show her what happened with Hetty. And Hetty's very successful. She opened her own tech company. She's makes Bill Gates look like a peasant. And so they're very excited for Hetty. And that's when the bunker alarm
I
goes
want to
off.
believe in this
And
new
they're like,
reality,
who's
Hedy
getting
Lamarr.
in?
And I want to believe in this new reality, Hedy Lamarr is basically Elon Musk, but like a better version.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of pervasive in the tech world. Yeah, so they quickly figure out that nobody's trying to get in. Wyatt actually got out. And so that's when we cut to Wyatt walking in this bar, and he stops when he sees the bartender, turns around, And it's Jessica. He hugs her and's like, "You're alive." And that's when it actually ends.
Yeah. I mean, I love the music there.
Yeah.
Music is great.
I still think there's something really, really fishy about all of that. And I can't remember what my we need to like gather my theories that I've had on Jessica because I can't remember all of them. But I feel like at least one of them was suggesting she was Rittenhouse. And how did she get his phone number otherwise? Because I feel like at this point, Denise has made them get new phones. So
I think we can theorize about that in the next episode for sure.
anyway.
But I do think you called it that Jessica was gonna come back at some point.
Oh yeah, no, I think I definitely I saw that coming.
And I mean, I feel like, early on you probably like see, okay, they're gonna bring back Jessica. And I feel like they choose their moment like very well because
Oh yeah.
We haven't heard
Perfectly timed.
too much about Jessica in a while. Like, things have moved on past then. Like, a lot of things has happened, and maybe like you don't really it's not like you don't remember that she ever was a thing, but like you probably didn't think at this one. You probably think, okay, they're gonna drop it, like, wait, it's moved on and whatnot, and nope, bring back.
Yeah, no, like it's a perfect timing because it creates the most drama. But yeah, it definitely raises a lot of questions of like why she's there.
Before we get into that, so Jessica, she's played by actress Tonya Glance, who is, I mean, at least I know her more as she was, I guess, because I think that show just ended, in Hightown with a Chicago Fire alum, Monica Raymond. And I think Monica actually, that it's her show. I think she runs that show.
I'm not sure. I've never seen
I heard it's really good. Like, it's been on my watch list forever. Now that it's, 'cause I think the last episode just aired like a couple weeks ago tops. And I've heard it's really, really good. So, and like Monica, she's extraordinary as an actress anyway. So I definitely wanna see that. But other than that, she's been in FBI International, SVU, Daredevil, and episode of Elementary. Like, mostly one-offs, but like literally every guest actor has been on an episode of Law and Order this like this episode. It's
Yeah, I mean, it's been running for decades at this point,
I
so.
know. Will it ever stop? It's like Grey's Anatomy. It's like,
Well, don't jinx it.
Oh, shoot. Sorry. I mean, to be fair, I have like no investment in either of their show, but
Yeah, no, I haven't watched SVU in a long time. That was really the only one I was consistently watching.
I'm not big on like pure procedural, like the Law and Orders. Like, I've been sort of watching the Toronto ones, and I'm like, that's cool, but it's like 100% case, and I know literally nothing about those detectives. And like, you could literally just transplant new people every episode, and I wouldn't care because I know nothing about these people. So, I do think, though, I mean, from what I've heard in SVU, you kind of have a bit of their personal life, but it's very, like,
Yeah,
it's
no, I
not a
haven't
big
watched in
part of.
years.
Yeah, it's not a big part of that. And Grey's Anatomy, I watch on and off. But yeah, that's the episode. And so, where do you think they're going with Jessica?
Like I said, I think there's a like, I feel like one of my theories is that she was Rittenhouse, and I feel like that has a higher than 50% chance of being right. Just because it's like how she got his number. Why now, after they've obviously like foiled their plans a couple times? Are they bringing her back in? The only thing I think is because they said though that they found her body, right?
Yeah, in the original
Yeah.
timeline,
In at least one of
every
them, they
time
found her body.
in all of them, they found her body. Whether like what
Yeah.
it the where changes, the how long after she disappeared
Yeah.
changes, but they always find it. Find
Yeah.
her.
But like with those inconsistencies, obviously something was going on. So like something fishy is being played with there. So if it she's not Rittenhouse, at least Rittenhouse is controlling it in order to kind of control Wyatt, I think. As far as we know, nobody's coming back from the dead. So there's that. Oh, way out there theory. If they cured Gia's heart murmur with time travel, can you cure death with time travel?
Ooh.
But let's see, what else could we
In that
do?
case, can they bring back Bam Bam?
I know that'd be they'd have to go find him.
Okay, how do you
Yeah,
bring
I
back
think that's
Bam
it.
Bam? Do you go back way back in the past to stop him from being killed, or do you go back later in the past before he goes on the mission? Which
So you'd
comes
have to
first,
do
the
it. You'd
chicken of
have
the
to have.
egg?
No, you'd have. They'd have to do the one like right before he died, like
Yeah.
immediately before he died. Otherwise, you create a time paradox that he wouldn't go on the mission in the first place. Not that this always kind of follows that timeline rule, but
No, but
that would have to
it's kind of
happen.
like, you know, the.
They did that with Legends of Tomorrow, though, with Leonard Snart at one point.
Ooh.
They like after he died, they went into the past and then brought him back, but then they had to drop him back in the past.
That's a good like time travel conundrum. But yeah, I think that's about it, right? You have anything else
Yeah,
that you want to
no.
add? No, I
I
really
think
like
that's
this episode.
yeah, no, I think the development with like what's going on with Gio was really interesting to me. I know that wasn't a huge part of the episode, but
No, but I mean all of it, I think. Like of course, like especially for me, like there's the layout of it all for sure. But even without that, like the like you said, the thing with Gia kind of opens up some interesting questions. I love Hetty.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a great character. And just like the 1940s time period, it's like really fun. Costumes, really fun. You know, backdrops and props and whatnot. So,
Yeah.
just a good episode.
It
Up
was. It
until
was
the
good.
last like 30 seconds.
That made it interesting, though.
I mean, yes, but also, can't you keep them happy for like one episode? One episode. They were
Yeah.
happy for 20 minutes.
I mean, hopefully it gets better from there. 'Cause I feel like at this point, since Wyatt has gotten together with Lucy, they're now like it doesn't matter what happens with Jessica, they're in game now because he had already moved on from Jessica in a way. And I feel like something has to happen where Jessica isn't maybe like the bad guy, but it's obviously not like he's not going back to her. Because otherwise, Lucy's kind of this like hitch. And you don't want to do that to a main character. So I feel like we still see them get together and like Jessica ends up not being as significant to as she was prior when she was just his wife. But anyway. So they're both like trying not to say anything, and Manny's just shaking his head.
I'm mostly trying not to cry.
Anyway, so I'm banking on the fact that they wouldn't make a character, a main character, a hitch in somebody else's marriage, when it's so few characters to begin with. But so follow us on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram and Threads. We are BIT Lifeboat on Twitter and Back in the Lifeboat on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook. And rate and subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podbean, wherever you listen. It helps our show grow and helps people find us. Also spread the word to your friends or family or Timeless fans so they can reminisce or if they want to watch along for the first time. And then in our next episode, we'll be covering season 2, episode 4, titled The Salem Witch Hunt. So I think I can figure out where we're going.
It's
Surprise.
very subtle. You can hardly
Yeah.
say, hardly tell.
But interesting though, because I feel like there's a lot of history that is surrounding the witch trials that we could talk about.
I'm very excited for the history minute on this one.
Yeah, because do you know much about the witch trials? I don't know how much.
I know some. I know the main lines mostly.
Yeah, because I think we study it off and on a lot, just of like talking about like the time period, and then also there's some stuff written that relates to the witch trials that you kind of study in school, and so I feel like we hear about it a lot from that. But I didn't know how much
Like
other
I've
countries
seen,
really heard
like
about it, because it seems like more like a blip to other countries, probably.
no, yeah, in school or anything, I don't think I heard much about it, except that you mentioned. Whatever I know is like either stuff I've looked up on my own or things I would like read in books or see in movies or shows or that type of things.
Watch that episode. Email us your thoughts at backinthelifeboatpod@gmail.com. Shout out to our friend Manny, who's editing this, and he gets to edit out my dog in this episode because my
Yeah,
dog is not very happy.
and providing background information when we have trouble Googling and finding words.
Coming in clutch. So
Exactly.
yeah, so thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.